You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The rebuilding process at Ground Zero has been a microcosm of how New York City has often worked. Backroom political deals, turf wars, money and greed, but also the grit, determination, and vision of honorable men and women who want nothing more than to see the project through to completion. And that includes a 16-acre space which pays tribute to the nearly 3,000 people who died there, and also with the Freedom Tower and accompanying buildings, a monument to the future. Beginning in 2005, Scott Robb, a staff writer for Esquire magazine, has been writing a series of in-depth articles on the process of rebuilding at Ground Zero. And the latest installment, The Truth About the World Trade Center, is in the September edition of Esquire. I'm very pleased to welcome Scott Robb to our show today. Hello.
Happy to be here.
So this is your eighth article for Esquire on the rebuilding process. Have there been that many twists and turns in the story to warrant so many articles?
We were hoping to do two a year, which would have been, at this point, 16 articles. I'd say there have been enough twists and turns to the politics, to the backstory, probably not enough twists and turns to the building itself.
Has any one thing taken you completely by surprise?
I didn't enter feeling naive, but I think I was naive about a couple of things. One is you walk by a building, a super skyscraper, a building that's 100 stories tall. I never thought about the complexity of each aspect, from bedrock, which in this case is only a couple hundred feet from the Hudson River, to the elevatoring required. And the other thing that took me by surprise was just the nature of the politics involved, the power struggles over the billions of dollars.
Well, we built the Empire State Building fairly quickly, the Chrysler Building. Things have changed. We'll get into that. Were you expecting to uncover so many boondoggles?
No.
Where did the rebuilding first run off track? Was it somewhere down the line, or did it start on September 11th, 2001?
Mayor Giuliani's farewell address, he suggested that perhaps it would be better if nothing be built there, that it be left as Greensward. At the same time, he created an entity called the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, knowing full well they were expecting Mark Green to be elected rather than Mike Bloomberg, and they wanted to make sure that all the money that would be pouring into the site would be controlled by Republicans. So right away, things got off to the kind of start that was opposed to the idea of this large public conversation about what we might want to build down there.
And a key Republican in all of this was the governor, George Pataki. You write, Pataki is the yutz responsible for nearly all that has gone wrong in the rebuilding of the site. Why do you place so much blame on him?
Well, he chose the master plan, the Libeskind plan, that as ambitious as it was and as loaded up with lovely sloganeering, placed the Freedom Tower, what Pataki named the Freedom Tower, One World Trade Center, at the most difficult part of the site to build. It was the last place that an engineer would have placed that building.
What was that, Libeskind's fault, or just the political imperatives involved?
Libeskind at that point, I'm not sure now, had never completed a project taller than four stories. So it was ignorance on the part of both Libeskind and of Pataki.
Well, at that time, Pataki was thinking about running for president. Does that play a role in all of this?
It plays a huge role. He had a cornerstone laid on July 4th, 2004, not long before the Republican convention was hosted here. He traveled to Iowa, New Hampshire, hoping to build some support for a presidential campaign that was based on being the father of Ground Zero.
So Libeskind wins the competition, and I thought his building was rather nice. So how much of it remains in the final project?
Outside of the siting itself, almost nothing. Libeskind's second design, which was really a collaboration between Daniel Libeskind and Larry Silverstein, who is the tenant still of Ground Zero, although not of One World Trade Center, they produced a compromise design that the NYPD decided was unsafe to build. The final iteration is David Child's alone, nothing to do with Libeskind's design.
He's Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill.
Yes.
What was his reputation among architects when he was brought into the project?
Well, unlike Libeskind, who's a fascinating guy, tremendous charisma, David Child's is a very straight-ahead, sober, came up with Skidmore, Owings, Merrill in Washington, D.C., So he's much less of a critic's darling than Liebskin, and his design has taken an enormous amount of hits over the years.
Well, the original World Trade Towers were not the most elegant buildings in the world, and a lot of people complained about them until they were destroyed. But this new building just looks like a tall building.
It's funny. I feel, I guess, married emotionally to having spent 7-8 years now down at the site. It's always been a privilege to visit. It's also, I think, important to remember that the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building, Rockefeller Center, these things were looked at as kind of vanity projects when they were built.
I think people liked the Chrysler Building from the start. But I'm not sure. And in the end, yes, they are all among the and the Seagram Building was another building many people were critical of. These are all the treasures of New York architecture. What was it about the initial design that was deemed unsafe?
Well, the second design had placed the building so close to West Street that the NYPD was concerned about the possibility of car bombs. And the base itself was open, literally open. It was raised off the ground so that, again, they were worried. The unspoken truth is that no one expects this site to go unattacked at some point in the future. And they were extremely worried that very little consideration had been given to those vulnerabilities.
So it was on stilts, in effect?
Yeah, it was raised. And in fact, the sketches, the drawings showed people walking literally underneath the building.
And now it seems to almost have like a fortress bottom.
You know, I've never known a world quite as fierce in the academic sense as architecture. So you have people referring to it as this horrible fortress and the Albert Speer comparisons. and they're doing everything they can in terms of cladding it in glass and making sure that there are LED lights. And yeah, we'll see. Architects use all kinds of terms like porous. We'll see what it looks like. But yeah, the fear is that it looks like a vault, like a tribute to our fear of attack rather than a beautiful building.
Scott Rabb's latest article about the World Trade Center rebuild is called The Truth About the World Trade Center. It's in the September issue of Esquire, which is on the newsstands now, or
should be
going on the newsstands. Well, it's been pointed out that the Holland Tunnel was completed in 1927, the George Washington Bridge opened in 1931, Lincoln Tunnel in 1937, a number of major highways. Why was the city able to tackle and complete such large projects then?
The Port Authority, which is a vestige of kind of Wilsonian progressive democracy, was created in 1921 in order to resolve disputes between New York and New Jersey about getting goods to New York City. When it became kind of a monolith, it's not taxed. It's not a governmental agency, but it has the powers of eminent domain and an endless flow of money from we were all familiar with the airports, the tolls, the tunnels. Back then, one man, Austin Tobin, kind of a Robert Moses, less well-known but the same kind of visionary, I wanted to make sure that the Port Authority was a regional colossus. And so it used its money and its ability to bond based on its future income to build these things.
Well, wasn't the idea for a World Trade Center proposed in 1943 when Thomas Dewey was governor of New York?
People had been talking about it for many years, and it was David Rockefeller who finally convinced Tobin that it would be a good idea.
And how was he able to gain control of the 16 acres in Lower Manhattan where it was built?
They condemned that land.
Love that area. I used to go there to
buy radio
equipment.
And of course, people were outraged, but eminent domain is eminent domain. They were going to build originally where the seaport is on the east side, and the New Jersey people on the Port Authority Board of Commissioners wouldn't hear of it because what does that do for New Jersey if you're building that on the east side? So they seized the 16 acres.
For those of us unfamiliar with the intricacies of the leadership structure of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, how does it work?
Each governor appoints an equal number of commissioners, and traditionally the executive director, who is nominally the CEO of the Port Authority, is appointed by the governor of New York. His deputy is appointed by the governor of New Jersey, and the chairman is appointed by New Jersey. In truth, it doesn't work very well. It's because New York City is New York City, and New Jersey, depending on your geography, where you're from, is either the bumpkin cousin or the treated shabbily, I think, from New Jersey's point of view. There is an ongoing battle, and it can achieve a measure of ferocity that's really quiet but compelling to make sure that New Jersey gets its share when a New York project is underway.
Well, in this case, that involved having a path terminal.
Yeah, what we call the Calatrava, because they...
But earlier, the World Trade Center also had path trains coming into it.
Right.
And for a long time, that wasn't... I remember it used to be called the Hudson Terminal, I think.
Hudson and Manhattan.
Yeah.
H&M.
Downtown went through a period where everybody thought Midtown was where all of the New Jersey traffic would come into. That changed somewhere around the 60s?
It was a self-fulfilling thing. When you build the Lincoln Tunnel and you build the GWB, the Hudson, too... You're choking off that railroad. What happened was that the Hudson and Manhattan, a New Jersey railroad, was profitable up until the Port Authority brought all the car traffic into the city. Then it became bankrupt, and that was part of the deal on the original World Trade Center, was that the Port Authority take over that railroad, which was a money loser and to this day loses hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Now, one of the interesting stories here is all of the backbiting and lack of communication between the New York Police Department and the Port Authority.
The Port Authority, which suffered horribly, in terms of its legacy and in terms of personnel, they suffered horrible losses on 9/11, was never an open, transparent institution.
Well, Robert Moses had transformed it into something less than transparent.
Absolutely.
But I'm assuming that if Robert Moses were alive today, the buildings would already have been completed.
Well, it's tough because unlike the Empire State Building, we're talking about 16 acres, very difficult building site, and its destruction was not a normal teardown. It was an act of war or a slaughterhouse or however you want to phrase it. It was far more fraught than any other building project in the history of the city.
A difficult construction site because it doesn't have the kind of the schist, the Manhattan bedrock that allows a building like the Empire State Building to go so tall?
Part of it is the bedrock itself, and part of it connected to that is the fact that the mighty Hudson River, which we all kind of take for granted, is a massive force. I'm no engineer, but they had to build what they called slurry walls, but the bathtub, to protect the entire site back in the late 60s, early 70s, unprecedented engineering work to keep the Hudson out. That alone was an enormous challenge.
So the New York Police Department was concerned about safety, and
yes,
they fought with the Port Authority. And then we have Larry Silverstein.
Larry Silverstein is in many ways a paragon. You could choose your word. He's emblematic of a New York real estate developer. Perhaps the most optimistic man I've ever met. And I don't think he's just selling things. I think he felt from the beginning that if you rebuild, there were 10 million square feet of office space lost. Larry had a 99-year lease on those 16 acres. And he was determined. People saw it as insensitive, as callous, as greedy. But he was determined to rebuild those 10 million square feet as quickly as possible, feeling certain location, location, location. People were going to come back and fill those buildings.
Scott Robb's article, The Truth About the World Trade Center, is the eighth in his series about what's been going on down there, is in the current issue of Esquire. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Later in the show, Amy Adams and Dennis O'Hare talk about starring in the Shakespeare in the Park production of the James Lapine Stephen Sondheim musical Into the Woods. And then at 1, Frank Langella talks about starring opposite a robot in a new film aptly called Robot and Frank. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Montclair State University in New Jersey, offering graduate studies in 100 fields. Instant Decision Wednesdays speed up the application and registration processes for students interested in starting class in September. More information at montclair.edu/graduate. Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Philadelphia, offering treatment options like hyperthermia, which uses heat in conjunction with radiation to help destroy cancer cells while sparing healthy tissue. More at cancercenter.com. WNYC is a media partner for the New York Community Trust, New York Magazine, Nonprofit Excellence Awards, educating New Yorkers about top management practices in nonprofit organizations. 10 semifinalists were recently announced. Details at npccny.org.
All kinds of people love classical music. People like Sting, There's a sparseness to English music that speaks to our souls. Going back and exploring John Dowland, for example, or Henry Purcell is something that I find very nourishing.
The music that nourishes Sting is waiting for you at WQXR. Find it at 105.9 FM and WQXR.org.
We're back with Scott Raab, RAAB. His article in the current issue of Esquire is called The Truth About the World Trade Center. It's part of an ongoing series. You're going to be doing many more, do you think?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how welcome I'll be back there in this particular iteration of the ongoing story. I did write about the Calatrava and about some of the I think the nastiness and in some ways the corruption that has gone on that will wind up being a $4 billion station that serves a fraction of the commuters served by Penn Station or by Grand Central.
It's a lot more expensive than originally projected, and yet they've cut back on it to save money.
Yes. It's
why is it costing so much
money? Well, because they had design plans that were incomplete to begin with. The Port Authority was seduced by this monumentalism, by which really infected the whole site to some degree, but this idea of tribute, of paying tribute by building this lavish and having this the one name star architect, Santiago Calatrava, build it. It was supposed to be federally funded to the tune of $2 billion. It will come in at somewhere around $4 billion.
Well, the hope was that we would kind of have a new Penn Station after we destroy the original Penn Station.
It's really more closer to Lautenberg Station in Secaucus. It is not a destination so much as it is an exchange place.
In the struggle for control over the rebuilding, what divisive install tactics have been used in the construction? I've heard of cement trucks being held up on the West Side Highway, for example.
That I know nothing about. I do know that for years, the site itself, when the Silverstein Properties, the tenant, and the Port Authority, the landlord, were locked in a struggle that looked like it was going to be to the death. No one could find a way to get Larry Silverstein off the site as the tenant, and the Port Authority was bleeding him month after month for ground rent when there was nothing but a pit. That at least, to me, held up, and still to some degree. It's difficult now to project even whether One World Trade Center, which is entirely the Port Authority's problem, will be finished by 2014.
Haven't there been turf wars between the Port Authority police and the NYPD overtime and things like that?
Well, and this goes back to that there was an infamous letter from the NYPD suggesting that the previous design was vulnerable to car bombings. That letter was either not received or lost for close to a year, according to the Port Authority. So even now, what was supposed to have been resolved to where the NYPD was in control of security for the site, which would be a relief to every citizen of the region, with all due respect to the Port Authority's police department, they are not the NYPD. That seems to be back on the table.
And then this whole thing is all about miscommunication again, and we heard about serious problems along those lines on 9/11 between the fire department and the police department. We would have thought that some of these things would have been corrected.
Those may have. But that's literal miscommunication. I would say this is not so much miscommunication as a struggle for money and for power in controlling the site.
Have there been any major mishaps in the construction of the Freedom Tower?
Well, the worst that's happened is in a building that belonged to Deutsche Bank that has now finally, after years, been leveled, where firefighters died, a standpipe had been cut. But no, the truth of the matter is, and not to entirely paint a dismal picture of the rebuilding, that the construction workers down there have done an amazing job under severely challenging circumstances, and there have been no, things have happened. Girders have fallen, mistakes have been made, but nothing that would rise to the level of what we've seen with crane collapses and other construction projects.
And nobody's died?
No, as far as I know, no one has died.
Which often happens in building of this size.
Yeah. But the Deutsche Bank, the fire in the Deutsche Bank building, which technically was across the street, that was a tragedy, and at least two firefighters died, if I recall correctly.
Well, it looks like the Freedom Tower is near completion.
It is. And what's happening now, part of what's in the article in the September Esquire, is there the cladding, the sculptural gesture that was supposed to reach 1,776 feet into the sky is being stripped of its cladding, what's called a ray dome. And, of course, the architects at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill are upset about that. And the Port Authority and its real estate partner, the Durst Corporation, are trying to save a few million here and a few million there. At what aesthetic cost remains to be seen.
Well, there has been a flight out of the downtown area in recent years. Wall Street now has become partially a residential neighborhood.
Yes, very much so.
Is it likely that the World Trade, what's going to be called? One World Trade?
One World Trade.
Is it not going to be called Freedom Tower anymore?
No, although I'll always call it that. I think a lot of the people down there call it that. It just, why that's catchy, I don't know. It's a little perverse. Yeah.
Well, okay. One World Trade.
Yes.
Are they going to be able to fill it?
Yes. Condé Nast is taking a little over 1 million square feet. That term sheet has been signed. As far as I know, that lease is complete. There will be government agencies in there as well, but getting Condé Nast to sign on and move down there was a huge coup for One World Trade Center.
Because then that sends a message to other places. This is a place to rent.
And we're hip. And we're hip. We're fashionable. We're happening.
Now, let's talk about another key figure in this whole story, one whose name is less well-known, Chris Ward.
Well, Chris was appointed by David Paterson to be executive director of the Port Authority at a time when things had become so moribund that it was uncertain if or when even the Memorial Plaza would be finished in time for the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And Chris publicly decried the monumentalism that had really hamstrung the project from the beginning, treated it as a job, as a construction site, actually took 3 or 4 months as soon as he was appointed to try and lay out some of the interconnecting parts of that jigsaw puzzle. The infrastructure 70 feet below what will wind up being the World Trade Center is incredibly interdependent. There is no part of that site that isn't connected to other parts of the site. Chris managed not only to bring all these stakeholders together after years of disputes, but they got that Memorial Plaza opened on 9/11/11, which was really, so far, the greatest moment that the site has enjoyed.
So is there going to be an underground mall as there was with the the original towers?
That's part of the train station. I'm not sure how much of it will wind up being underground, but yes, we will not see it from street level as far as the train station goes.
So Chris Ward was very effective in getting this thing moving forward.
The only people who have not given testimony to Chris Ward's efficacy, his competence, and really his inspiration have been Andrew Cuomo, who basically let him go in order to pick his own executive director, and Chris Christie, who has his own selfish reasons for making Chris look bad.
So competence was not an issue here. The election of Andrew Cuomo kind of meant that Ward's days as executive director of the Port Authority were numbered.
Yes, absolutely.
Did he replace him with somebody who was equally competent?
Well, I don't know as much about Patrick Foy as I do about Christopher Ward, but I think Mr. Foy has been seriously crippled by being essentially a hack, someone who was put into that job at Cuomo's behest, who has stripped One World Trade Center, the Freedom Tower, of some of its beauty in order to save a few bucks. And going forward, Chris Ward had in place a series of toll increases that would have played out much better and to the Port Authority's benefit in terms of its reputation in the region. Chris understood that the Port Authority itself is one huge ongoing negotiation, not just between New York and New Jersey, but the entire region, and that any sense of being a visionary in terms of building things, huge things, big things, things that we need, depended on a sober and politics-free approach to the extent that's possible. The toll increase was botched completely by Cuomo and Christie, and Patrick Foy going forward is not going to have the budget required to rebuild LaGuardia, to do things that actually need to be done to help keep the infrastructure of the region healthy.
My guest is Scott Robb. His latest article in a continuing series for Esquire is called The Truth About the World Trade Center. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So Chris Ward was dealing with more than just the World Trade Center. He was dealing with all of the Port Authority's projects.
Yes.
I'm getting the sense here that part of the problem is also that we have these two governors who would naturally be at war with each other. And they both want to have a major impact on what goes on in the Port Authority.
And they have made common cause in a couple of cases. They shut down construction on the Memorial Museum, which was scheduled to open this September 11th. They promised to open it this September 11th when the plaza was open. Chris Ward's out of the way. Mayor Bloomberg, who had chosen this Memorial Museum and plaza as his project, is a lame duck. And both Cuomo and Christie are perfectly happy to let this grind to a halt until Bloomberg departs and they can take over.
Well, there are all sorts of other plans that were originally proposed that have seemed to have died along the way. It was going to be an art center. The drawing center, if I remember correctly, was going to move there. There was going to be a theater, maybe an opera, I'm not sure, an opera company.
Yeah.
And because different people had different objections, the drawing center, the fear was that there might be some drawings that some of the survivors of the victims of 9/11 might object to. So no drawing center there?
No. And I think Frank Gehry was going to design a performing arts center. That remains unlikely at best. Part of what happened is the monumentalism, that we're going to pay tribute to everything, and also the nature of this. It's a small site.
But the idea was to rejuvenate the downtown area, and that would mean bringing arts institutions there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's happened organically, perhaps not in terms of those kinds of magnets, but in terms of people converting old office buildings into residential and infusing the whole of downtown with a sense of being, as you said, a residential neighborhood now. I also like to point out there was supposed to be a tunnel, the ARC Tunnel, a $9, $10 billion project to provide tens of thousands of jobs to go from New Jersey. This was part of the quid pro quo to get the World Trade Center built. Chris Christie killed that and walked away with $3 billion of federal money that he's now using for road construction projects in New Jersey.
You suggest that it's very likely that the new tower will be a target for terrorism.
I've never talked to an expert on terrorism who doesn't assure me that it will be a target.
So I'm not going to rent space there.
New York was not built by people like you and me, apparently. You have no trouble getting people to come down there to work.
You end the article through the eyes of Mike Pinelli and Mark Brecker, two construction workers from New Jersey, who talk about feelings of pride and honor to be involved in this rebuilding process. Do you think a lot of people share their optimism?
The people down there, the construction workers down there, Mark and Mike, I met back in 2005. Mark, I actually owe an apology at the ending. I suggest he's going to perform a particular act upon completion of the building, that he feels embarrassed that I didn't put it into his words, and it didn't come from him. I just am happy to have a chance to publicly apologize to Mark for even suggesting such a thing. Be sure and buy the issue. But yeah, the guys down there, and most of them are guys, I don't think they're jingoistic. I don't think they're anti, Ground Zero mosque. I think they genuinely see themselves as part of New York's ineffable resilience, all those highfalutin phrases that I adore and try to, I think they walk that walk every day, and I think this rebuilding means the world to them.
And they're from New Jersey. Is that part of the deal?
Well, Mike and Mark are from New Jersey, but plenty of the people down there are,
And was there a part of some kind of quota system?
My quid pro quo?
No, quota system where you had to have some.
Nah. No,
it's just coincidental that they're
from
New
Jersey. Yeah, they're construction superintendents. Yeah.
Scott Robb's article, The Truth About the World Trade Center, is in the current issue of Esquire. And obviously, we didn't tell you the complete story, so you might want to read the article. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.